Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Is Tech News Today for Monday, August 15th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us from This Is My Next, soon to be The Verge, Mr. Nilay Patel. Welcome back to the show, Nilay.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I don't look as good as you. I'm using this little Skype webcam, and you guys have these hot new HD cams.
You know, I apologize for that. We'll send you a studio.
Could you do that, please? I need some. The blue lighting behind you is very nice.
Now that we're done with ours, we can just build one. Start
just send me
them
the
out.
Old one.
Yeah, you need a cottage.
Yeah, exactly.
we'll sell some more bricks. We'll get it done. Spare
cottage.
Ship it over.
We'll send it to you. Well, the top story today is Google buying Motorola Mobility, which actually is part of our continuing coverage of patent wars. In patent wars today, Google's purchase of Motorola Mobility has been announced for $12.5 billion. They say they're going to pay $40 a share. That's a 63% premium on the closing price of Motorola Mobility last Friday. Couple things to note here. Motorola Mobility, not Motorola Solutions. The company split itself into two, with the sort of two-way radio end of the business going into Motorola Solutions. All the consumer electronics you're familiar with under the Motorola name, part of Motorola Mobility. Larry Page had a post up on Google calling this a way to supercharge Android. Once the deal closes, Motorola is going to run as a separate business unit, but it sounds like what Google wants to do is get their patents. They would probably assign the patents to the mothership of Google and then let Motorola continue as a fully owned subsidiary. Now, there's already talk about whether regulators will approve this action or not. Google is said to have a $2.5 billion reverse breakup fee, which is essentially them saying, we will pay Motorola Mobility $2.5 billion if regulators do not approve this deal.
That's actually pretty high if you compare it to the T-Mobile AT&T breakup fee. It's like, I think they get $3 billion. T-Mobile gets $3 billion, and the purchase price is $39 billion. This is a significant bit of confidence by Google if they're going to put $2.5 billion if this doesn't go through.
And, this is something that took people by surprise. A lot of people did not realize this was going to happen. Well, this sort of got posted earlier this morning. But Om Malik over at GigaOm saying Microsoft was actually in the running and was about to get Motorola.
I mean, this is the same Motorola that we were speaking of last week that said that they were completely open to Windows Mobile 7.
Well, you know, that Om piece says that Microsoft was in the running. So it kind of makes either Sanjay Jha was sort of lying and covering his tracks last week, and I think that that's more likely, or they were actually talking to Microsoft and Google as late as last week and deciding which direction to go. But I think that this decision was made more than a few weeks ago, and they were getting the paperwork in order. That's sort of my sense.
That's normally the way these things go, timing-wise, is you're agreed a few weeks before you make an announcement.
Right.
And Google, didn't they like somewhat, they wrote something for an ITC hearing between Motorola and Apple. And last week I was asking, like, well, why is Google getting involved with this, even though they're kind of partners, but seeing that they just bought them on Monday, today, maybe they were thinking about this for a long time.
The reaction from the other mobile phone companies is something, you know, you'd want to pay attention to, because I think a lot of the fears of consumers is, well, now is Motorola going to be the only place I get Android? Or are Motorola phones going to get Android first before other manufacturers?
Or have some better version of Android that Google cares about more.
The carriers are being mostly positive about this. Samsung said, we welcome today's news. HTC said, we welcome today's news. In fact, there's some boilerplate text going out here, because all all of the Android partners said some version of, we welcome today's news, which demonstrates that Google is deeply committed to defending Android, its partners, and the entire ecosystem. The more interesting came from the non-partners. HP said no comment, but Nokia actually said, as you would expect, this reinforces our belief that Windows Phone was the right decision. Because, you know, I guess Motorola, you know, it'd be interesting to see, will Motorola put out a Windows Phone? They were supposed to.
They were all in with Android. I think, you know, they had been looking at like any responsible company, Motorola had said, we're all in with Android. We have a single supplier for the main component of our phones, just the software. We need to be open to having multiple suppliers and hedging our bets, which is what you would say if you were, you know, responsibly running a company. I think that's changed now. I don't think they had gone any farther with developing their own OS or looking at Windows Phone. I think they were just always open to the possibility because, I mean, that you have to be open to that possibility. I think what's most interesting now is, you know, Google runs Android, the software shop, as a separate business unit right now. So they're going to be essentially running two companies that sell things to one another. And they're going to have to figure that out. I think that's, you know, all these other partners are saying these very safe things about welcoming and, you know, we're happy they can protect us with patents. What they're not saying and what I think desperately needs to be addressed is, how does Google begin to compete with its partners? Because they now own a company that openly competes with its partners. And that hasn't been addressed at all. And I think on balance, if they can do the things with Motorola's patents to better protect the ecosystem, I think the partners will accept the added competition. But if they can't make good on this promise of, we bought these patents, we'll protect everybody, this will fall apart very quickly.
Do you think regulators will approve it? Do you think we'll even get to that point? It seems probable.
Yeah, I can't imagine why they wouldn't. There are plenty of other integrated hardware software vendors out there. You know, there's Apple, there's RIM, Samsung makes an OS. I can't imagine why a regulator would look at this and say, you know, there's an anti-competitive element here. There are still lots of Android licensees. It's a huge market. There are still other companies that make phones, obviously. I think, you know, in Google's, the amount that they've placed, the bet they've placed on passing approval, $2.5 billion, is very high percentage-wise compared to other deals. So you have to imagine, it's high even compared to AT&T T-Mobile, which was previously pretty staggering. You know, you have to think the regulators are going to say, well, you know, it's sink or swim. You know, nobody else has ever managed to pull this off, and you're on your own. But I can't imagine they're going to say, well, this is going to hurt Samsung, and we're going to stop it. I mean, that seems a little too... Given our current political climate in this country, that seems a little too forceful by the government to meddle in private affairs like that.
So it seems obvious that what Google wants here is the pile of patents that Motorola has that Google doesn't. Because we've talked about the fact that to win in the patent wars, you have to have a stockpile of patents that you can use against anyone who comes after you. And Google wants that for Android. They also get, with Motorola, set-top boxes. So just a brief side note. Do we see integration of Google TV coming to the Motorola set-top box?
I've been saying that's the only way that they could really grow the Google TV platform is to go ahead and actually partner with either a cable company like Time Warner or a Cox Communications or somebody that actually rolls out set-top boxes to their mm-hmm. customers or a manufacturer of set-top boxes like Motorola.
But doesn't that kind of compete with the cable companies and the content that they deliver through their networks?
Yeah, cable companies don't want anything to do with Google TV. In fact, Google's best thing so far has been to partner with the FCC to push through that crazy AllVid project.
Massively successful AllVid project.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a cable company crazy enough to go ahead and partner with them in some sort of fashion to bring the Google TV platform in a modified form that suits that company. I mean, look at Time Warner was it Roadrunner that had the TV recording that was centralized storage?
It was Optimum Cablevision.
So
Cablevision got sued for that, right? They got sued by their own content partners, and they had to fight for years to make that work. You know, the problem isn't necessarily the cable companies. I think the cable companies, on the whole, would like to sell their customers more things, and they would like to, you know, in a more managed way. They want to sell you fast internet and have you pipe as much TV over that internet as they can so they can say, you're using too much internet. We have to impose caps. Now you have to pay for additional internet. You know, I mean, that's where their incentive lies. They're being held back by the content providers, you know, and at the end of the day, the cable companies are going to make their money. So what Google has to do, is convince both the cable companies and meddle in the content provider relationships that the cable companies have to make their platform be as successful as possible. And man, you think the cell phone industry in this country is nuts and captured by dominant entrenched interests and crazy carrier relationships. I mean, the cable companies are even worse.
Where do you think they learned it from?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, Motorola might make set-top boxes and be the dominant manufacturer of set-top boxes in this country. I think they're number two worldwide. I think a company called Pace is number one worldwide. But, you know, in the U.S., they're number one. But what they're doing, I mean, they're shipping hardware that Comcast loads its own software on, or Verizon loads its own software on. And, you know, for Google's sake, Comcast, Verizon, start using Android instead, they've got to actually make a case for why that's better than what they're doing. And, you know, Google's Google, and they're very persuasive with that sort of thing. But this isn't a slam dunk right away. It's going to take a long time.
Well, considering that Google has Google TV, is there any chance that Motorola would actually go into the consumer market with a Google TV that's made by Motorola? That way they can just, instead of going through the cable companies, more like a TiVo-style device, kind of like the way they partnered with Logitech in the past. But now they have their own hardware division. They could do
that. A partnership that killed Logitech.
Yeah, Logitech didn't quite like that. But this idea that they would, I mean, obviously Motorola can do consumer electronics. We've seen it with their phones. So would it be too crazy to move, now that they actually have the operating system for this box, they can already make and just
I think they can expect to see that, whether it's a success or not.
Yeah, I think that's the most logical partnership of the two companies, rather than going through the cable companies at all.
Well, they would have to make a cable card box, right? I mean, that's what you're suggesting. And Motorola certainly knows how to do that. What Motorola has traditionally been bad at is doing that in a way that's open to the consumer, right? So this Allvid standard is right along the same lines. It's the FCC mandated cable card and said every cable box has to have a cable card. And, you know, ideally, you know, consumers will swap the cards in and out. The cable industry basically refused. They locked the system down. So now every cable box Motorola sells has a cable card in it, but the slot is sealed shut. And if you open it, you lose your warranty from the cable company. So it's like they're good at making the hardware, but they're not good at making hardware for the consumers. And that's, you know, Google might be better at that. But, you know, to push really hard into cable boxes, I think everybody kind of realizes that's the wrong move.
I don't think that saves Motorola or Google TV. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not a panacea for either one.
Yeah, it's the money loser. The transition in cable is to video over IP, right? It's to using the internet to actually deliver television. And Google is now part of that conversation because Motorola has been part of that conversation, obviously. And so that's the benefit, is Google gets a seat at the table. What they do with that seat at the table is they've got to figure out what their strategy is, because I don't think they've had a working one since the dawn of Google TV.
Now let's move into the main reason for this acquisition, and keep in mind a couple things here. Motorola is not making a profit. They are not an attractive acquisition for a lot of companies. They're a loss leader. So what does Google get here? They get a pile of patents, as we mentioned. Neelai, you had a post up today trying to sort of line out what it is that Google is getting and how it might help. Do you think that this is worth $12.5 billion of patents?
It is if it works. You know, I mean, there's, you know, they have 17,000 patents, 7,500 pending applications. They're going to keep writing at patent applications and getting patents in the future. You know, this is catch up for Google. You know, and you know, it's like in the social network at the end, we're like, this is a speed bump, just pay the money and move on. You know, this might just be a speed bump for Google. But, you know, there are open questions about how, now that you have these patents, how do you actually use them? You know, and there are three kind of big cases that can be resolved out of this. One is Motorola versus Apple. There's Microsoft versus Motorola, and there's Oracle versus Google. And, you know, all those cases have been going, right? And, you know, Motorola's patents haven't scared Apple into signing a license agreement yet. They haven't scared Microsoft into signing a license agreement yet. So you have to wonder how Google's presence at the table will change that dynamic. And maybe Google has a strategy, but it's not one that has been articulated yet. With the Oracle case, which is the most important case to the Android ecosystem because it touches on Android software specifically, adding Motorola's patents to the mix could change that dynamic completely. You know, Motorola owns a lot of networking patents. They own a lot of video encoding patents. And, you know, Oracle does that stuff. So there's a chance that the Oracle case could be dramatically affected out of this deal. The Apple case, the Microsoft case, I don't know. I mean, that hasn't been articulated on the call today. You know, Google wasn't being particularly forthcoming with their strategy around that. That remains to be seen. But I think the Oracle case will be the most immediately affected.
Now, I read on the Register an article that was disputing the fact that they would be, as Andrew Orlowski saying, they're not going to be any help with Oracle because these are totally different situations. He claimed, first of all, that the Oracle suit was a copyright suit. And he said there's no patents that Google has that they could threaten Oracle with. But you mentioned in the article and just now that they do have network patents.
Right.
So, you know, it seems like it's likely that there's something that they could use here, but how much of a stick is it?
I mean, without doing a review of 17,000 Motorola patents.
No, of course.
Patents,
I'm trying to phrase the question in a way you could possibly answer it.
I don't want to lawyer my way out of it or weasel out of an answer, but I'm going to do just that. You know, you have to do a patent review, and you have to imagine Google did the review and said there are reasonable and strong patents that we can assert against Oracle to tip the balance in that case. You know, the thing about the Oracle being a copyright case is that it's both. So the allegations in the Oracle case are, one, Google took Oracle's patented technologies and infringed them, and then, two, Google actually copied Oracle's code, which is a copyright infringement, and they did it outside of whatever licenses Oracle was demanding. So those are two different issues. So he's right that there's a huge copyright component with the copying, but there's also a patent component. And if Google can, you know, tip the balance on the patent component, they might be able to force a settlement on the copyright component as well. I mean, this is all like, these are deep shenanigans, right? I mean, this is tug of war and negotiation. I mean, this is like old school business. It's not phones. It's not what people want to talk about, which is, will Google make awesome phones with Motorola? Unfortunately, I mean, that's the reality of why they bought Motorola. It seems that, you know, they are in a position of weakness when it comes to their liabilities with both patents and copyrights, and they needed to get themselves into a position of relative strength. And they spent the money to do it. How that impacts the rest of the ecosystem, how that impacts their own products, how that, you know, cable TV, how that changes that market. It's what I was saying earlier is they had the money to answer one question. You know, Larry Page had the money to answer the patent question. It seems like he also had the money to start asking a bunch of different questions, which is where this becomes very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of people were complaining, I noticed on Google Plus in a conversation I was having earlier, that, you know, what does this matter? What do we care about the machinations of companies and what they're doing with patents? How does it, you know, I want to know how this is going to affect me. And the fact of the matter is, to answer how this is going to affect you, you have to get into those machinations, because how it's going to affect you is how many different handsets with Android can be made and offered, and how successful they can be, and at what cost. Because if Google can't defend the patent suits against Android, then you get what happened with HTC paying Microsoft a little money, happening over and over again, and it could drive up the cost of manufacturing those handsets. What I'm curious with is, if Google wants to be in the hardware business, this is not organizing the world's information. How possible do we think it is that Google actually assigns the patents to itself and then tries to either spin off or liquidate Motorola Mobility?
I think, you know, Fareed wrote a piece about this this morning. The idea that why not just buy the patents outright and sell Motorola off as a hardware division? I could see Google going into hardware pretty fast, because the thing is, they want to control the experience with Android at certain times, and every developer or manufacturers want to skin Android all the time. And the actual stock experience now is good enough that they don't need this. If they have their own branded stock version of Android, like Motorola, that has, I don't know, maybe better integration with Google Voice and things like that, they can really differentiate themselves a lot. And I think it's going to be an interesting way to set a new standard. Kind of like, they've been really generous before with the Nexus series. They're like, okay, HTC is the first one. The second one was Samsung. The third one was supposed to be Motorola. And it probably will be now. So I think they're probably going to stick to it.
You know, but they said that Motorola will have to enter the bidding process for the Nexus phones just like everybody else, which sounds insane, right? I mean, can you imagine, you know, and the way the Nexus thing works is Samsung's engineers come to Google's campus and live in a building for 8 months building the next phone. Can you imagine if that was happening and the Motorola engineers are in the building across the street and they don't have access to the latest version of Android and they're not building a super competitive phone right out of the gate with Samsung? I mean, that's the sort of thing where you get into the deep politics of competing with your own partners. It's, do you delay your own product that could be competitive because you want Samsung to get a head start? that doesn't seem to fit in anybody's incentive. And, you know, Google is, you know, don't be evil, and they try to hold themselves to a higher standard. But ultimately, it comes down to looking out for number one, right? And if you're running a hardware company, and you can't help your competitors be more successful than your own hardware company, especially when you're giving away the software for free.
Unless, of course, the number one is giving away the software for free and getting it to be the dominant platform, and you don't do that by strong-arming your competitors.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a type of altruism that I don't think I've ever seen on a business scale.
I've definitely seen companies do things not in their best interests because separate entities don't get along. I mean, that happens at Sony all the time.
Right, Microsoft.
Because they're so big. It happened at places that I've worked. So it's not like it's never happened before that you could wall off a company like that. It just doesn't seem like the players involved have the kinds of self-interest that would drive them to stay away. The self-interest is going to drive them together in this instance. That's why I think Google probably isn't into running Motorola Mobility for the long term.
Then, I mean, I wouldn't think when Google bought YouTube, yeah, they'll do video all day, every day. Yeah, well, they changed a lot of things that changed in the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. When they bought YouTube, YouTube was mired in copyright infringement lawsuits left and right. They finally made it profitable, I think it was last year or it was this year. So I didn't expect Google to do a lot of things. So I'm thinking there's a good chance they're going to keep the hardware.
Go ahead, Neil.
I mean, I think there's actually a good chance they'll keep the hardware, too. I just think that... I think history is, you know, informative here. You know, Palm tried to do this how many years ago with Palm One and Palm Source, then merging back together and splitting back apart, and that was a disaster. Apple, you know, once licensed Mac OS to Motorola, the circle keeps on turning. I mean, competing against your partners is one of those things that always seems attractive because, you know, you're both selling the software, or in this case, not selling the software, and you're making your own hardware. But it's never really been done on this type of scale with success. And Google has a lot of challenges to make it happen. I'm not saying they're not up to it. They're very smart, and they have to have considered it. But they haven't articulated how they're going to do it.
All right, real quickly, we will get off the whole Google story here in a second. But want to note that Google actually has filed a request with the U.S. Patent and Trade Office on Friday to re-examine two of Lotus' patents. At trademark office. I left off part of that. That we believe should never have been issued, says Google Senior Vice President Kent Walker. Those are the two patents that Lotus is currently suing 11 smartphone app developers for allegedly infringing. They involve in-app payments. And Google has filed what's called, and I'm going to let the lawyers explain this, inter partes. And apparently 95% of inter partes re-examination requests are granted. But re-examination doesn't necessarily mean they change or reject the patent, right?
Let's go let Neil do it.
Sure. Yeah, it just means that they're going to do the re-examination. What's weird is that the re-examination process, if granted, on average, takes like 3 years. It's like 36 months, 38 months. So Google's filing this thing. It's not an immediate sort of intervention, right? It's a let's put everything on hold while the patent office takes 3 years to figure it out. What Google kind of should be doing is rushing in and saying, we're indemnifying, you know, all the app makers in the market, and we'll pay your fees and do all this other stuff. They haven't done that yet, you know, and there's a lot of weirdness between the relationship of Lotus Intellectual Ventures and Apple and Google, right? This is a patent that was once owned by Intellectual Ventures. Lotus says Apple and Google and Microsoft all have licenses to the patents. They haven't specified what those licenses say. Google hasn't specified what its license says. There's a lot of monkey business around who owns what and who has what rights to these patents. And, you know, in the end, I think Lotus will be crushed like the scum that it is.
Do you think that this will delay?
So many companies are. Go ahead.
Will this delay the suits against the 11 app developers?
You know, it probably will. And I can't tell you if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, in speaking to software developers and app developers, they're telling me that what they're most worried about is not necessarily liability. You know, for them, liability just translates into increased prices and that everybody complains and the system changes, which is what most people want. They're concerned about the uncertainty. And I think that's the real problem is, you know, business relies on stability and certainty. And you need to know what your risks are and what your liabilities are before you can move forward in a business. And they don't know the answers. If they knew the answers, they could take steps, right? They could say, well, screw it. My app costs $4.99 now. That's the price of the patent wars. But they can't do that. And they can't take those steps because they don't know if they're the right steps. And I think that's where Google's intervention and Apple's intervention, and ultimately I believe it will be Microsoft's intervention, that's going to really change sort of the game here. They're all trying to provide certainty.
I just find it interesting that Google here going after the patent itself rather than like Apple, say, going and saying, oh, well, since we've already licensed the technology and since we're providing the app developers with the technology that they're using for those in-app purchases, that kind of gets...
It's a flanking action.
Exactly.
Huh. Well, so this is the thing with the contracts, and Matt Marcari, writes the Litigating Apple blog, wrote an interesting piece about these strategies. Is traditionally when you sign a license to a patent like this, you promise not to try and invalidate it, right? You say, well, I'll license your patent for $10, and in exchange, you know, I'll do all these things, and one of those things is I'll respect the validity of the patent. And so because we don't know what the licenses say, you know, that sort of explains why Apple went for, well, we have a license and it's in our contract. It's very strange for Google to have said these patents are invalid, because that's traditionally not in the type of license that they would get. Again, this is all wonky and really nerdy, and I know, trust me, people tell me how boring it is all the time, but this is sort of the fabric of the industry.
Yeah, and this is the biggest topic amongst the industry right now. This has sort of taken over everyone's attention, which is why you're seeing so many lawsuits and you're seeing so much discussion of it, and it's why Google bought Motorola Mobility. They would not have gotten into this hardware business if they didn't need the patents. I feel 96% certain that is true.
I've heard pretty much the same today. I mean, in just talking to people, this was spurred by a desire to have patents, and the acquisition of the entire company was that would be nice too. This will add enough value to buy the whole thing.
Yeah, but why pick the Motorola patent portfolio over the Nortel ones?
Because Microsoft wanted it, and they needed to keep it out of Microsoft's hands.
But got the Nortel patents.
Right. That's why they went after Motorola, because they lost Nortel.
That's the weird thing. If they were willing to spend $12.5 billion, why wouldn't they spend like $7 or $8 for the Nortel portfolio?
They screwed up, okay? They screwed up, IS. Let it go.
I think they were blindsided. They didn't realize that they were going to be outbid
money,
by
obviously.
So much.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they also said that Motorola would immediately add to their bottom line. So, you know, Motorola is losing money, but it's losing money because it has to, you know, it has to run itself as a business. You take away all the, you know, there are layoffs.
What, are they going to be a nonprofit now?
No, they said, I think the exact line from Google was, it will be mildly accretive on a non-GAAP basis, uh-huh. Which basically means if we do our accounting somewhat, you know, outside of the standards,
right.
We'll make a tiny little profit, right?
That's interesting.
Which, you know, that's a positive way of spinning it. But, I mean, there are going to be layoffs coming at Motorola. I mean, there's an entire set of administrative staff and maintenance staff and all this other kind of staff that you have that can just go now.
I'm going to tell Google's the IRS that next year. I'm just mildly accretive on a non-GAAP basis, but I didn't make any money.
No, not at all.
All right. For you, Baltimore, on in the chat room, we're done talking about patents for the day. We're going to move on.
Remember.
We'll take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix. Netflix.com/twit gives you free 30 days trial of movies and TV shows that will take your mind off of patents. You can watch all kinds of shows on your phone, on your tablet, on your Nintendo Wii, your PS3, your Xbox 360, watch them up on your television. You can get them on the Roku, the Apple TV. There's all kinds of ways to watch Netflix. So whether you have never tried it before, you have a friend or a relative who's never tried it before, use this URL, netflix.com/twit, for a free 30-day trial. Give it a shot. I think you'll like it. On to, well, it's off of patents and on to anonymous hacking things. We mentioned on last Friday that BART had cut off wireless communications in its tunnels in order to prevent a protest, which apparently they did prevent. And BART was hacked over the weekend, as you might have guessed. So over 2,400 customers were being informed Sunday afternoon that their personal information had been obtained and published by Anonymous. And mybart.org is still down. We're getting a network solutions page when we go there. So I think BART just took the page down, and it's going to a default registrar page.
What I can't get past is, not that this is the first time this has happened, but these poor innocent customers, they're just trying to get from point A to point B. You're using BART so you don't have to drive and get stuck on the Bay Bridge. And now all your crap is out there for everybody. I mean, how is that going to help you rally behind any group?
Well, this is the same of all these hacks. I mean, I think we feel it a little more because we
sure.
live and yeah, work I mean, around
this is
BART.
Obviously, local but, public transportation.
But any of these hacks where they release public information, whether it's the officers or other companies that are around the Sony universe, they all did the same thing. They released the information of the public participants.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are collateral damage in the war against the company.
Which I understand is, I mean, it shows that they're powerful. Listen, we've got information, and we will leak it out. You need to pay attention to us and
yeah, actually,
respect our demands.
Anonymous actually went on to say in the text file where they released the information, we apologize to any citizens whose information has been published, but you should go to BART and ask them why your information wasn't secure with them.
Come on.
Also, don't worry, because probably the only information that will be abused from this database are that of BART employees. I might note here the first list in the database, the actual dev team. Password? admin123.
Oh,
that's a good password.
But that's like, we apologize to any Citibank customers whose money was stolen, but we assure you that you should just go ask Citibank why their vault wasn't locked.
Probably not going to spend your money.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll just send Spitty. You know, it's like, it's so nonsensical. It's just, every time I read one of these stories, I realize this is how I talked when I was 17. You know, it's rage against the machine. They're not accomplishing anything. They're just being terrorists.
Well, they're adding another entry to plaintextdefenders.com, the place that keeps the wall of sheep of people that keep passwords in plain text instead of encrypting them with salty hashes. Come on, people.
Yeah, I honestly the information leak is nothing new here. They did, of course, take down mybart.org, which some people use to find out when their train's coming. Not like it's the only place you could find it.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know what works even better than that? I don't know. The your mobile app for Android or iPhone to Google Maps. I mean, this is way better than mybart.org was.
I don't know. I use the BART app.
Really?
I used to. I took BART all the time.
Yeah. Try Google Maps. Anyway, I just, and to anybody that thinks this was super sophisticated, even Anonymous points out that any 8-year-old with an internet connection could have done what they did. They just used some simple SQL injection tools to kind of point at it and see if they could break in, and yeah, they did.
Yeah, let this be a lesson to public transportation worldwide. Your networks are probably not secure enough.
I think BART, which, by the way, if you don't know, stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's the subway here. They should hire, on a contract basis, the IT department at the Fullerton Police Department in Fullerton, California, who were also subject to anonymous targeting this week, but the hack didn't work. They didn't get any information out of them.
Or 8-year-olds, because it sounds like this nation is sitting on top of some untapped resources of security specialists.
I mean, this is seriously like any 8-year-old with a hammer can come smash the windows of your ground floor apartment. You know what I mean?
Especially if your Windows password is admin123.
Yeah. Ouch.
I mean, buy some double pane windows, for goodness sake.
And we should
saying an 8-year-old can do a bad thing doesn't justify you doing a bad thing. I mean, that's like, I have the morals of an 8-year-old who's out of control.
Well,
like,
doing a vigilante thing, and that's what Anonymous does. And in this case, it's probably worth pointing out that the rally is actually continuing. It's going to happen today at the Civic Center in San Francisco at 5:00.
Yep. You know what the real vigilante move would have been to set up an alternative network on the BART. Right, so the rally
that would have been
continue.
Awesome.
Oh, absolutely, I agree. That's what we've needed in Egypt. That's what we need here today.
Well, and it did happen in places like that where it was a much more serious issue at an entire country's freedom and government.
You could have the whole internet in a briefcase thing, right? We actually covered that as a story, totally. So that could
we did. Yep. I was here for that one.
All right, Yahoo and Bing better at search than Google. Sort of. Experian Hitwise reports every month on the share of searches, as well as something called the success rate. Success is defined as when someone did a search, they ended up clicking on something. So you can argue whether that's a real measure of success or not. But if you do count it as a measure of success, 81.6% of Yahoo searches and 80.04% of Bing searches resulted in a click, compared to only 67.56% of Google searches.
First of all, that's not such a big discrepancy. I mean, if it was 6% of Google searches, I might be like, wow, there's really something to this. But don't you think that because people are using Google that much more, that these percentages almost might be kind of equal, if you factor that in?
I think the thing that we're not taking into account here is the fact that, a lot of Google searches don't result in a click and you still have a success. Like, I just typed in define colon happiness. You could say movies 23188 or weather San Francisco.
Yeah, or Intitle, index of
Apache index of file type .mp3. I mean, that's a good one.
Well, for me, like, I end up at Bing when I can't find anything on Google, And so, like, eventually, I'm just tired of searching. So I'm just like, I'm just going to click something now. I'm tired of this. If I got to Bing already, I mean, I haven't found anything anyway. So
just the white flag click.
Exactly.
I
don't know if that's a success, but it just means I'm tired of searching. I'm just going to pick whatever this is.
My new website, surrenderclick.com.
It's Bing. That's awesome. Bing's new slogan, Bing and give up. And finally, AT&T. Is going to sue a law firm. Let me get that. Bursar and Fisher.
Let's sue him in federal court.
Somehow I remember it sounding much more emphatic in the movie than.
Well, it might. That was pulled from the trailer.
Okay.
Maybe it was without the background music. Boosted up in volume.
If you don't remember this law firm, Bursar and Fisher, they have taken the interesting tactic of filing thousands of individual arbitration cases against AT&T. They've filed some of them so far in eight different. Have filed eight federal suits so far. They intend to do it over and over. The reason for this is AT&T's terms prevent you from taking a class action. But they do allow for arbitration. So they're trying to block the T-Mobile AT&T merger, saying it's harmful to me as a customer, and they're going to file this thing 1,000 times. AT&T is suing them, saying, "Look, this is not allowed. This is not going to work. The arbitrator doesn't have the authority to stop the merger. So these suits are irrelevant."
AT&T is going to lose this, and they're going to lose this in one of two ways, right? Either the court's going to say, well, you won the Supreme Court case blocking class actions from your customers, so now you have to live with the results, which is thousands of arbitrations. Or they're going to say, well, you signed an arbitration agreement saying you're limited in scope to just these types of cases when you can't file a class action. You have to do arbitration for things like rate plan increases or contract length terms. But because the scope is limited, you have to accept a class action. And that's, you know, they're going to end up at one of those two places. No court is going to say you've managed to contract away the right of your customers to speak to you in the courts.
Is this AT&T just doing PR to make sure that, okay, this merger is going to go through? That the line here is, however, the bottom line here is an arbitrator has no authority to block the merger or affect the merger process in any way. I mean, is this just to stop like stock prices from dropping or panic from settling in? Because if people start going, oh no, the merger won't go through, stock prices could change.
Or to stop another 1,000 people from getting in on the bandwagon that is a real life denial of service attack legally.
You know, I think AT&T, they've put a pretty big bet. I think they have $12 billion or something on the T-Mobile acquisition going through.
It's a bigger total number, although it's a smaller percentage of
it's
the
It's a smaller percentage,
price,
but a bigger total, right? I think they just have to respond. I think this is how you would respond to a 1,000 arbitration requests, is saying, wait, this isn't the process that we agreed to. What I'm saying is, you know, either the judge is going to say, well, you won at the Supreme Court, right? You cut off your customer's ability to file class actions, and you said arbitration is the way to go. So now you have to deal with the arbitrations. Or the court's going to say, you said arbitration is for customer issues, and this is the scope. Now you have to deal with a class action. And I think AT&T in this case would probably prefer a class action, because I think there's likely more precedent on their side saying customers can't file a class action to block a business decision. But we'll see. I mean, this to me, it feels like more machinations. I mean, every carrier in the mobile industry is doing something crazy around this merger right now. And this is just one more step.
Yeah, people have lost their minds. Let's move on to the news fuse.
Blow some stuff up.
Oh. Is Apple falsifying evidence or just bad at Photoshop? I mean, Aperture. A German website called Weberwelt, or something like that, was the first to report that on page 28 of Apple's filing against Samsung in the community design infringement case, the photo of the Samsung Galaxy Tab is in 4:3 aspect ratio, making it look pretty much identical to the iPad, even though the Samsung Galaxy Tab is actually in 16:9 in real life, and therefore a bit thinner and longer. Fiendish.
It's like when those landlords use fisheye lenses on bedrooms. Oh, and you go, looks palatial in there.
Yeah. This is the biggest 455 square feet I've ever seen.
Or we use a 4:3 pull down to make us look thinner on the show.
Exactly. Yeah, they've also got the app drawer open and not the home screen. Which is
Apple's that's just putting them in a favorable light.
You think the court would kind of see the actual Galaxy Tab in person and the iPad? So I'm not really worried
about
that.
I'm always seeing the drawer open in advertising as if to make it look more iPhone-like, even from the manufacturers that sell the phones. So
yeah, no, it's very true. They do that. But, you know, for Apple's, you got to press a button to get there. You know what I mean? So, you know, the thing with the German court is that under German law, the injunction issues immediately, which is actually in the United States, there was a case called eBay versus Merck Exchange, which said the injunction doesn't have to issue immediately. This is super wonky again. But basically what happens is you complain about a patent infringement. The German court says, yeah, that looks like you have a case, injunction. Like, we'll stop this in its tracks while we figure it out. So, you know, Apple might have played the process to their favor here, but the question is to what degree. I mean, the question is, some lawyer paste this in and say, oh, they're about the same size, and like stretch it out and play sloppy, or do they do it maliciously? Because I'm pretty sure they would have gotten the injunction one way or another, because it's like a hair trigger response in Germany.
Moving on to EA now. They want you to use their Origin service so much that you're pretty much required to use Origin if you ever want to play Battlefield 3, which I've heard a couple people do. They'd like to play Battlefield 3. And this tactic has many a gamer in kind of a tiz, but EA is attempting to smooth things over by offering a free game if you pre-order Battlefield 3. Your choices are Medal of Honor, Mass Effect 2, or Dead Space 2. So I guess all is forgiven?
No.
Free game? Mm. Not free game good enough?
No? Okay. No,
it's
not that you can't buy Battlefield 3 anywhere else but Origin. It's that you can't buy it on Steam. No one is going to forgive them until you can buy it on Steam.
Yeah, let's talk about something completely different. Ina Fried had the greatest headline today. It said, Tabco picks wrong day to reveal itself as Fusion Garage's latest effort. Fusion Garage made the Juju tablet, and they've shown off a 10-inch Android-based tablet. It's calling the Grid 10, and they're saying it's unlike any product out there. The 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi version is around $500, and the 3G version is around $600, which is kind of like every other tablet out there. The company's also showing off 4-inch smartphones. Good luck, guys.
Did you guys watch the announcement?
No, I missed it. Yeah.
Most insane, unhinged product announcement I have ever seen in my life. It was the CEO of Fusion Garage in an empty theater talking to no one and canned applause.
That is metaphorical.
It was unbelievable. Everybody should watch it just to see what crazy looks like.
You want to talk about crazy? Intel is once again charging folks $50 not to break their legs. I mean, to unlock features of the chips they already own. That's right. The Intel i3-2312M, the i3-2102, and the Pentium G622 can be upgraded with a $50 card. You enter the card's code online and you get a higher frequency and larger cache. You don't pay the fee and, well, just saying, be a shame if something happened to your frontside bus.
Be a shame if something happened to your chip here. Verizon is testing a new low-cost data plan in several locations, including Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. For $20 a month, you would get 300 megabytes of data on either your smartphone or feature phone. This test is being marketed as a back-to-school promotion that will run from August 18th up until September 30th.
RIM has announced its BlackBerry Management Center, which allows a company to manage up to 100 devices for free. Management Center can back up devices as well as find a remote wipe. We have fly issues in here. If anyone's watching the video feed, I'm very sorry. It's distracting to have flies buzzing around your head when you're trying to talk about RIM's Management Center. Backup devices, find or remote wipe, a lost BlackBerry, very helpful. It's only designed for companies that use web-based email, not services like Exchange.
W3 Innovations, the parent company of iOS app developer Broken Thumbs, owes the FTC a little money. Games made by Broken Thumbs, like Emily's Dress Up, you know, very popular game amongst our crowd here, collected data from its users like names. There's a small problem with that. The FTC says that data collection runs afoul of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. The FTC sued W3 on Friday, and the two settled today, Monday, to the tune of $50,000. W3 has also agreed to delete its information that it has collected.
Amazon just introduced a new iOS app called Amazon Student that gives users free 2-day shipping for 6 months. The app also includes a barcode scanner in hopes that the students will go to the bookstore, scan textbooks code, and then buy it at Amazon. And if that's not enough to get your .edu friends on the student app, Amazon's even promising exclusive deals. Quite snazzy. It's like Prime.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
The Stanford Solar Car Project has been working for 2 years on its latest all-solar vehicle called Zenith with an X, which later this year will travel across the Australian outback, powered by nothing but sunlight. The team says Zenith is the fastest solar car ever built. World Solar Challenge is held every 2 years. I don't know if I want to drive in this thing, though.
Wait, how fast is fast?
Whoa, dude.
I did.
Up to 60 miles an hour, they're saying.
Up to?
Yeah, they're hoping
that's not even fast enough for the slow lane.
Well, they're riding in Australia, so maybe they ride slower there. I don't know.
I doubt it.
That's a little bit of red on the car.
Aussies.
This is a prototype. This is awesome. There's no fuel in this thing. It's running entirely on solar, on sunlight, and it can go 200 miles without sunlight.
So it's a city car.
Yeah, kind of, except that it uses mountain bike wheels. I mean, come on, Sarah. If a tall, dark, and handsome showed up at your door with this thing, you'd get in.
Well, it's only got one seat, I think.
That's true.
Oh, well, then you
wouldn't
get
on it.
I'd have to really like
jog leg beside him.
By the way, the fly is dead.
Thank you, Tom.
You really did ninja that thing.
I did.
In the middle of the story. That was impressive.
Thank you.
You should try spiders next.
Let's move on to the calendar.
Mozilla's Firefox 6 isn't officially released until tomorrow, but if you want to be at the front of the pack, the code is actually available for download. It has been since Saturday, the 13th, via their FTP server, so go get it if you're one of those people who likes to have things. August 21st is a big day for RIM on the carriers. Okay, so the Torch 9810 is coming to AT&T, the BlackBerry Bold 9930, and the Torch 9850 are both coming to Sprint for $250 and $150 on contract, respectively. Plus, the Bold 9930 is also coming to Verizon. If you can keep all that straight, it means RIM's, you know, getting out some phones. HTC has finally offered their bootloader unlock tool at htcdev.com for international HTC Sensation users. So those of us in the U.S. will have to wait, but coming soon, says HTC. And finally, Steve Jobs' biography now has a cover photo. It's that iconic Steve shot. And a publishing date of November 21st.
That cover looks like it was made in paint. Can I just say it?
You know what it looks like? It looks like one of those graduation photos where you rest your head on your chin.
The picture's good. No, the picture's great, and the name is good. But like the way it's like assembled, it's like I did it in Sketch on my Mac.
I think it was done on Pages. If I'm gonna,
it's actually the most advanced number spreadsheet ever made.
He's rubbing his chin as if to say, "How can I take Exxon down?"
Wasn't the graphic
really? Because I thought he was going like that
at Microsoft.
That
was the rejected cover.
Gotcha.
Let's move on to the emails, TNT at twit.tv. James writes in and says, I'm glad to see the game makers taking on Steam. Steam acts in very bad ways. Here's one gamer that's not mad at EA. James says they can deactivate games that you purchased at retail outlet if they believe you have violated Steam's, not the game publisher's, terms of service. You don't own the rights to a game through Steam. I wanted to give away my retail box of the Orange Box, and Steam threatened to deactivate my entire account. I look forward to playing Battlefield 3 on EA's system. And then he writes in all caps, FREEDOM!
No, I agree. I mean, Steam is junk, but then again, it's once again another example of giving away rights for convenience.
Why do you think Steam is junk?
Well, for the exact reasons that he puts out.
Origin's going to be better?
Where's the used game market on Steam?
Where's the EA's used game market going to be? Origin doesn't change any of these issues. This is an issue of online management. This is not an issue of freedom.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's no different than like the App Store. It's draconian in nature. But you give it up because it's quite convenient.
Can I say something really nerdy?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I realize I've been saying nerdy and wonky legal things over and over again. This is one of those things where, you know, in our regular lives, like out in the world, we have all these laws. And, you know, we walk into retailers and there are actually laws of the government that protect us from stuff like this. All these communities that we build online, the arguments we have about them are the same arguments I learned about in law school about the real world. It's, you know, what is obscenity in the App Store? Well, that question is, what is obscenity in small town America, right? The question of what can a retailer do to you after you've purchased a product is the question of what rights does Walmart have to search you as you walk out the door? And so we're coming to that point where we have to reconcile sort of like the real world and our real government with all of these privacy policies, terms of services. Basically, all these companies are writing laws on top of our existing laws. And they're saying, these are the laws of our community. And we have to pay more attention to them. And so I'm sorry that I've now said like the 50th nerdy thing on this podcast.
No. Well, to add one more nerdy thing, I think what you're trying to say here is that all of this has happened before and all of it will happen again.
Yeah. You know, to everything there is a season.
Yeah.
That's not nerdy.
Sorry.
So say we all.
It's birdie.
That's just good music, man. That's just awesome. Great song.
We got another email that was in reference to discussion last week on TNT. A universal text message app, says Anonymous, already exists. And it's called Google Voice. You can send standard SMS on any phone or computer or tablet, and it uses a normal phone number. What True. I would say to Anonymous is, but a universal text message app would not need to.
As I mentioned
numbers.
On the last show, Jabber already exists, which allows you to send messages via text from any platform that it's installed on, including Google Talk.
And that's an open platform. You know what else is an open platform, and it's been working for
What's
the last
that,
30
Darren?
Years? Email! Somebody open port 25 because
I as and I already had
email.
This argument.
Oh, really?
Yeah, huge discussion.
Or actually,
we got a lot of emails about this. There's what Skype, Google Talk, WhatsApp, XMPP. Yes, you can build things on that.
And the answer to email as well as all of these things is not that you can do it. Of course, you can do it with all of these things, including email. You can do it, but is someone doing it, and can someone make it the accepted standard? Right now, SMS is the only thing that every phone has. Mm-hmm. So that if I want to send someone a text on their phone, I'm sending it by SMS because I know they've got it. I don't have to think, well, do they have Google Voice
right.
installed? Or, you know, I mean, I guess what you're saying with Google Voice is you can send a standard SMS, but that's just doing SMS again. I want something that's not going to charge anyone. Because here in the U.S., I know the international users are always astonished when they learn this, you often get charged for incoming text messages as well as outgoing.
Okay, well, if your entire concept here is about not charging you or the other individual on the other end, then I agree, then yes, a text message.
And it takes marketing and it takes carrier cooperation.
Well, what's more interesting than this is the fact that we're not just going to pick up the phone and call each other.
No, but sometimes you don't want to talk.
Yeah, I know.
You just
I agree.
Want to I don't
no,
want
if you look
you
at the last, if you,
the
like half the apps on my home screen right here are just new and innovative ways to say, yo, what's up?
Those icons that you're using make it look like it's a prototype, like wooden.
Yeah.
Mock-up.
How do you know it's not?
Is that not like it's a feature phone? Like,
yeah,
what do you got
that?
This is a special Android skin. But no, I'm saying like the last six icons on my phone. yes, it's like one of those remote controls for the TV.
Yeah,
it's like
a jitterbug.
I feel like the argument of, well, you can still just email, or why don't you just pick up the phone and call the person is not the answer.
No, but that's like all of these new
We're
services.
We're all aware that we can do that.
Twitter, Google Plus, Google options. Talk, the SMS app, the, I don't even know, secure text app. Like, all of these apps are just another way for me to say, yo, what's up?
All right. Thanks to everybody on Reddit. Technewstoday.reddit.com is the place where you can submit stories, vote stories up and down. We look at that to help us decide what to cover on the show. Thanks to KB Hargava, Can3GXW, Comfixer87, Eliminate, Captain Kipper, SP Sheridan, and
H. Rhymes,
who have been calling H.R. Himes.
You are H. Rhymes. We know that now. All Thank right. you for emailing us.
Thanks to everybody. Reddit is technewstoday.reddit.com. Also, you can buy bricks still to be put up in the Twit studio, bricks.twit.tv, like this guy did. He actually filmed an unboxing. Well, that's actually a Google spreadsheet, but this is a video of the guy unboxing his brick, because you have the option to actually buy a copy of your brick and have it sent to you. So there you go. Nice. Buy a brick.
Ah, they shipped it to him upside down.
I know. It's kind of embarrassing. No,
and that's a full brick. That's not just the face of a brick.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That's great.
It's got felt pads.
Mountable for your table.
And it even
obviously.
Has a little brass thing on the top. So.
Oh, yeah. It's an inscription on the top.
Check it out. Ooh. Thanks to Justin Salazar, who made the video for the patent wars that we had at the top. And Chris Lane, no relation, who scored the
You don't know
video.
That.
You told me it was no relation. I asked you.
No, this I said probably.
Oh, that's right. I just got the answer.
Somewhere. How could he know anything?
And Neelai Patel, thank you. This is mynext.com for now, but The Verge coming in autumn.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
People should go to thisismynext.com. When The Verge launches, though, will it be at theverge.com?
It will be at The Verge. We'll do something with This Is My Next. We haven't quite figured it out, but we want to keep it around because we're very fond of it. But yeah. Everything will be at, you know, theverge.com. That'll be... And I promise it won't be a WordPress blog. It's okay. A promise. It's one that I will hold to.
A promise made from Neelai Patel to you. That's a contract. It's a verbal contract.
Yeah, it is. It's a commitment.
Yeah.
You can. That's patent infringement right then.
Thanks to everybody for listening or watching. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm.